back. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. We'll be joined, we believe, shortly by Rick Sterling. And I'll just tell you, Rick has an important article at a site. It's called SyriaSupportMovement.org. And Rick has been very active on the matters, particularly in the Middle East, but you can find him, LA Progressive, by the way, a site promotes and publishes Rick. We've had him on the show previous. He's also taken up the issue, which is our hemisphere. There's a developing struggle around Nicaragua at the moment. You can always tell the wolves gather. They pick out a target, and then you see Ottawa says something negative, and then London says something negative, and then the U.S., and they move in like wolves. And at the moment, they've targeted the Sandinistas again, because the Sandinistas have proved very resilient and able to hang on to power against really endless shenanigans from Washington and Ottawa. And before we, Rick, join us, I'll also remind our listeners, I think we should all of us combine to tell the government of Canada and the Liberal Party of Canada, the Conservative Party, the NDP, Bloc Québécois, and others that Juan Guaido is not the president of Venezuela. I know it's a revelation, but he's not the president. I think we're joined by Rick Sterling. Are you there, Rick?
Yes, I am, Phil.
I was just doing a public service announcement. I wanted the NDP of Canada and the Liberal Party to know that Juan Guaido is not the president of Venezuela, because they still have him on their books as the president. I wonder, today, you write on many topics, and I was just mentioning that there's a recent article. I don't know that you're the author. I suspect you. It's called The Bab al-Hawa Deception, and it's about humanitarian aid going into Syria. That, to me, is I'm really glad you called my attention to it. That's a very important argument, because the U.S., people are forgetting, the U.S. has an extremely aggressive policy towards Syria. And one of the attack points has been the question of humanitarian aid. They keep saying that, you know, they have to do something for the poor Syrians, and they of course, can't have anything to do with the criminal government in Damascus. Elaborate. What is the deception?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked about that, Phil. And, yes, the statement was issued by the Syria Support Movement, which is an international group, many prominent members from Canada, actually, but also members from the UK, from Palestine, Syria, the United States. Anyway, we issued that statement just yesterday about Bab al-Hawa. Bab al-Hawa is a border crossing at the northern border of Syria, bordering with Turkey. And it is the entry point, it is the only allowed entry point for UN humanitarian aid to Idlib province. What most people don't realize is that this aid is only going to a small area, which is under the control of Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which is the Syrian version of al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. So a huge amount of aid is going across this border crossing from the United Nations to support al-Qaeda's domination of this zone, which is the last zone within Syria controlled by the al-Qaeda branch. Now, when it came up at the UN Security Council a few weeks ago, the U.S. and the Western allies wanted to extend the authorization of this border crossing for 1 year. Russia and China said no, that this border crossing has to be shut down eventually. They ended up agreeing to extend it 6 months, and I think this will be probably the last 6 months that it is extended.
Mm-hmm. By the way, can I ask you why you're optimistic about why? What's that optimism based on?
I think Russia's been very despite the claims in the media here that Russia is very aggressive diplomatically. It's more or less the opposite is the case. Russia actually looks for compromise and agreement as much as possible, and this is an example where they agreed to extend it for 6 months, and after which I think they are going to demand that this aid to the civilians in this area go through the Damascus government. Mm-hmm. The reason is one of the UN principles is respect for the sovereignty of each state, and it would be like half of British Columbia was controlled by a Canadian version of Al-Qaeda, and there was huge amounts of aid going across the border from the U.S. to that zone. Imagine that southern British Columbia was controlled by Al-Qaeda, and the Canadian government did not like it. They were trying to eliminate that and to regain sovereignty, but the U.N. was saying, well, we need to supply the civilians. And the big catch there is that the aid comes under the control of Al-Qaeda, which prioritizes its fighters and which insists on compliance from civilians. And from the past history, they don't allow civilians to depart that area, or they risk their lives very much if they do. Mm-hmm. So the statement is called the Bab al-Hawa deception, and there's many aspects to that. One is that they keep exaggerating the number. I mean, sometimes you hear 2 million, sometimes 2.5 million. Talking about 4 million civilians, which is ludicrous. There were the whole population of Idlib province was 1.5 million before the conflict began in 2011. A massive number of civilians fled the area when it became a conflict zone. And so there's way, way less than that now. Some of the civilians that are there are not even Syrian. They're Uyghurs from Western China. They're Turkmen from Turkey. They're supporters of Al-Qaeda, basically.
By the way, that I'm really glad you're mentioning, because we're rarely told who everybody is. And what you just stated is part of the they're called HTS.
HTS,
their own description of their forces. These elements, the Uyghur elements, brought their families.
Yes.
And they're actually occupying the homes of Syrians.
Exactly.
Financed by this aid, I suppose.
Well, they ended up there because Turkey was very avidly supporting the sectarian attempt to overthrow the government. Mm-hmm. And they were doing that in all sorts of ways. But so they were sponsoring, and there's a historic connection between the Uyghurs and Turkey, and there's similarities in the language, and there's different connections, but they were actually offering Turkish passports to refugees from the mm-hmm. Uyghur part of Western China. Mm-hmm. But that's just one thing that's very rarely mentioned. When they talk about the civilians in Idlib province, they hugely inflate the number of civilians, and they also don't mention the fact that HTS, or the Al-Qaeda version of Syria, imposes taxes on all this aid coming in, and they make millions of dollars per month. Mm. So the West is effectively money laundering to a sectarian organization, to Al-Qaeda in Syria.
And they've been doing this. They're very good at it since the beginning, right? They've been camouflaging basically direct aid to terrorists.
Exactly. I mean, there was the Timber Sycamore CIA plan. And that was being run at $1 billion a year. I mean, that was a major, a major operation. Huge amount of aid, and this is the way it's continued. And a lot of people don't realize that Syria is effectively a proxy war mm-hmm. by the U.S. and by the West against Russia, mm-hmm. With the Syrians paying the price. And there's some similarities to Ukraine, mm-hmm. which is also a proxy war by mm-hmm. the U.S. and allies mm-hmm. against Russia, with the Ukrainians paying the price. But mm-hmm. in the case of Syria, the U.S. imposed the so-called Caesar sanctions, which are extreme sanctions preventing any reconstruction of damaged areas, any government hospitals, any government schools. It's illegal to support that in any way. And not only, and the U.S. imposes these sanctions on third parties. So if you're an investor from the Gulf, from the UAE, or from anywhere in the world, and you want to, you know, to help Syria rebuild, you're going to be violating, and you're going to come under the gun of the U.S. Treasury Department.
By the way, we're speaking to Rick Sterling. Rick, you've written about the quite extensively about the Caesar sanctions, which was really a scam. I mean, I should say a phony argument. In my memory, I saw some of the names of the authors. These are all high-ranking U.S. personnel, basically, former American prosecutors and whatnot. I mean, why anybody would go anywhere near those guys and call mm-hmm. it objective is beyond me. And you also mentioned the Syrian Red Crescent is cut out of this.
Well, they're the ones who should be providing the aid through Damascus, and that would be in terms of supplying the civilians. Whatever the number is, they need to be supplied with aid and supported, but it should be done through the UN recognized government in Damascus, and you can have an international organization which can handle aid in conflict zones, such as the Red Crescent in this case.
And Syria is a member of the Red Cross, right?
They should be providing it.
I mean, they've already, I recall the whole white helmet phenomenon. They tried to replace the mm-hmm. Syrian Red Cross or Red Crescent mm-hmm. with the white helmets. That was a game they played.
Yeah, exactly.
It delegitimized Syria's mm-hmm. only, its own internationally recognized mm-hmm. body.
Yes. So this is one of a continuing onslaught of misinformation, disinformation, deception. You know, the white helmets was one of the big successes of marketing, purported to be a homegrown Syrian organization, Syrian civilians who came from all walks of life and who just wanted to rescue people. It was total nonsense, of course. This was a creation of the West, founded by a British military, former military officer, come private contractor, and funded, hugely funded, $100 million total over some years by the U.S. and by the West to provide propaganda.
Yes,
and they only worked in those areas where Al-Qaeda was dominant.
And he was based on the Turkish border and eventually, mm-hmm. As they say, offed himself. Mm-hmm. Really, and you notice how they just cast that aside like it never happened. They just move on.
Right. Yeah.
Nothing to see here.
Well, it was a little bit dicey. It's very I haven't seen anything totally convincing as to what really happened there, but there's a lot of suspicions because the white helmets came under the close inspection of the Dutch government, and they realized there was something fishy. There was claims of you know, financial impropriety by him. So they were getting it looked like the pretense was going to be exposed, and it was around that time that he died under strange circumstances.
And that's when the magician said, "Now look over here."
Yeah, exactly.
We're speaking to Rick Sterling. Rick, I got to ask you about, because you write on many matters, but a subject I originally was thinking about, but all these others, are more important, I believe. But you commented on your Twitter account, and you were citing an article, Nicaragua. Many people here certainly in Canada, are noticing that there's a shift going on in our hemisphere, and more countries are barking back at the U.S. But the U.S. has decided it wants to target, once again, its old nemesis, the Sandinistas. And,
yes.
And they're, of course, talking about what a failure, and it's run by a dictator and all that. Orient us on that. I think you cite an article by John Perry. What does he say on the Sandinistas been a success or failure?
It's been the misinformation, the media distortions really started ramping up a few years ago. In 2018, there were massive street protests and that evolved into a substantial amount of violence. Over 100 people killed, in a couple of dozen police officers were killed, and the story was this was just a popular uprising that were led by students against a brutal dictatorship, the Daniel Ortega dictatorship, and you know in some ways it followed a similar pattern to what we saw in Libya, what we saw in Syria and other countries. Where U.S.-funded organizations managed to propel a lot of opposition. Some of the protesters are well-meaning, but there are violent elements that get intertwined, that kill people on both sides and that really inflame the situation. So ever since that time in the spring of 2018, Nicaragua successfully managed to ride it out, and they actually, interestingly enough, since all of the accusations in the Western media were that all of the violence was coming from the Nicaraguan police, and what the Nicaraguan leadership decided to do was to send all the police departments all throughout the country into their barracks and just stay there, and and they allowed the violent protesters to take control of many streets. They set up roadblocks all over the country. They shut down the economy effectively. Give them enough rope, and they exposed themselves. And then it was clear to everybody how much misinformation had been going on by Facebook, over social media, how things had been not as they were portrayed. And subsequently, people realized how much distortion there was. I became interested at the time. Of course, I traveled to Nicaragua in my youth, and was when Somoza was still in charge, actually. And Nicaragua played a big part in my own education, because when I visited Managua and other cities in Nicaragua, the people, young people that we were talking with, told us about this dictator who we had never heard about before, growing up in Vancouver. Mm-hmm. Subsequently, he was overthrown. Somoza was overthrown in 1979.
By an earthquake and a revolution.
Yeah. Well, so they had a successful revolution, and Daniel Ortega became the first president of Nicaragua who was not anointed by the U.S. since 1912. Mm-hmm. And that still stands today. Daniel Ortega is the only president of Nicaragua for 110 years, who wasn't installed either through the Marines,
by the Marines,
or through
from the halls of Montezuma.
Yeah, either through occupation of Marines or the installation of a dictatorship like the Somoza and Baby Doc and the family son.
All the dogs.
So, but what's going on there now is amazing. They have free education. They have free health care. Number one, and according to the World Economic Forum gender gap studies, Nicaragua is number one. It is the best in terms of gender parity in political power. Women, regarding the police, they have all female police departments. They have 90% food sovereignty. They have 95% electrification of the country. They have the best highways in Central America. They have one-third of the country is an is the indigenous autonomous zone, which is within Nicaragua, but it's effectively governed by the indigenous people there. Mm-hmm. On the Caribbean side and the north and the south.
Mosquitoes.
Mosquitoes, as well as Mayangna and other mm-hmm. and other tribes. So they really are leaders in all sorts of ways. And what the Sandinistas have really effectively done is they've improved the lives of poor people, poor yeah. and working people. And this is anathema to the U.S.
Yes, and the president of Mexico, and the president of Mexico told the president of the United States, Nicaragua needs to be invited to these meetings.
Exactly, exactly.
Isn't that
yeah,
something?
Good for President AMLO of Mexico for saying that. How can you have a summit of the Americas where Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba are not even invited?
The Americas are not invited.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Exactly.
But I think it's really important. There's the disinformation, all the negative accusations, which are either totally or largely distortions and false. But the accomplishments of the Sandinistas in power is really impressive. I was there for the election in last November, and it was really impressive. The enthusiasm of the people. They had six competing candidates for all positions.
That's more than they have in the U.S.
Way more. Oh yeah.
U.S. only has two.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah, Tweedledum or Tweedledee. Yep.
Yes. Oh, listen, by the way, I'm really glad we're talking to somebody who actually goes and sees with his own eyes. Thank you very much about that. I want to make sure I get at least 2 minutes from you on a subject I know close to your heart, certainly to our health, which is the different an approach of John F. Kennedy to the crisis with Russia and that of Joe Biden, which you've written about. And people just Google Rick Sterling and read the article. But tell us quickly, Rick, what's the difference?
Well, in some ways, the Cuba Missile Crisis of 1962 has some similarities to the Ukraine crisis we see today. Both were conflicts primarily between Russia or the Soviet Union and the United States, and they both involved countries that were on the doorstep of one or the other, Cuba being on the doorstep of the U.S. and Ukraine being on the doorstep of Russia. But the way they handled those crises is totally different. John F. Kennedy believed in negotiation. He believed in compromise. He respected the fact that the Soviet Union could have their own legitimate security concerns. And they ended up agreeing, JFK and Khrushchev agreed that the Soviet Union would withdraw the missiles they had installed in Cuba, and at the same time, secretly, the U.S. agreed to withdraw the missiles they had in Turkey that were aimed at the Soviet Union.
That nobody had ever mentioned.
Yes, exactly. It was secret at the time, but it eventually came out. Also, that JFK agreed there would be no invasion of Cuba to allay Cuban concerns. Mm-hmm. So the contrast between that, between having negotiation, agreeing to compromise, agreeing that you can't let things spin out of control. Unfortunately, we're in a situation now where the Biden administration just demonizes the Russian side.
Yeah, they're in regime change mode, right?
Exactly, exactly. So it's a really dangerous situation, and I'm basically in the article, I'm suggesting that other people need to speak up on this and bring some cooler heads to the table and to recognize that this can't it's going to be a lose-lose for everybody.
Absolutely.
If they don't recognize that compromise and negotiation are essential.
That's absolutely right. Rick Sterling, we're really glad to be talking to you. Thanks very much for your great articles and look forward to talking to you again.
Okay. Thanks, Bill.
Okay, Doug. CIUT, the Taylor Report, 89.5. I want to thank Shay for the great work. And I think we've covered a lot of ground. See you next week.